And I believe we are recording now. So, good morning. My name is Michael Connor. I am the missions pastor here, have been since 2005. We were attending the church quite a bit longer than that. Came into the area in 1996. I was working with a crew. I worked with a crew, Campus Crusade for Christ, for over 25 years. And that's why we were here in D.C. working at the Christian Embassy, where Bobby and Sheila are the directors of that. They're also here at Emmanuel. But 10 of the years that I had with the crew were in West Africa, in the country of Cote d'Ivoire, which is right next to Ghana, pretty close to Nigeria, around the bottom of the West Africa there, and was there for about 10 years, three of them single, while my wife, whom you've now met, was doing her music thing in Asia, but we had met each other, and I recruited her for Africa, and she willingly came. So about 3 years single, 6 years married. Our son was born in Africa, lived his first 2 years there, and we were pregnant with our second and final child on our way back. So just have a real heart for the world. French speakers, that was a French-speaking country, so we were French speakers all those years and still do. Did graduate work at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School out in Chicago. And I did a Master of Divinity with a church planning emphasis, and always have been very bullish on the church. Did doctoral work in intercultural studies. So have always been bullish on the church, so when an opportunity came, we were attending here. John Malone, the previous missions pastor here at Emmanuel, was retiring, and we were looking to move from parachurch work more towards church-based work. So very happy. I was serving as an elder already in missions at the time, and so made that transition towards being the pastor here in 2005. And it's been wonderful. This is a congregation that has a real hallmark of supporting missions. Right from the earliest days, supporting missionaries, sending short-term teams out, and we have tried to continue that tradition. But it takes a lot of commitment and involvement, and so even your presence here today is encouraging. I want to begin with some scripture. I want you to turn here, if you could, Matthew chapter 4, verse 23. Point I'm going to try to make as we look at some scriptures here in Matthew. If y'all could sign in, please, I'd appreciate it. Grab some papers. The point I want to make is that Matthew really structured his gospel around the call to be involved in ministry. And Jesus really changed the paradigm from the Old Testament to the New Testament. And I think Matthew structurally lays that out, that movement that we'll get to in just a minute. But Matthew summarizes the ministry of Jesus here in Matthew 4:23. Jesus was going throughout all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every kind of disease, every kind of sickness among the people. Keep your finger there and flip over to Matthew chapter 9. Matthew chapter 9. And we'll look at verse 35. Matthew 9:35 says, Jesus went throughout all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction. Does that sound familiar? It's almost verbatim what was said back in chapter 4, and the Greek is even closer. I did a comparison of these verses side by side with Greek, and there's only just a few words of difference. When you see something like that in literature or in the scriptures, you really have to consider them as bookends, or an inclusio would be the literary term for it. You kind of look to see what is wrapped around this, because this is a statement of what Jesus' mission was. This was the work that Jesus did, teaching, preaching, healing, delivering. This was the work that he did. And so when you have these these bookends that are established by Matthew 4:23 and Matthew 9:35, you kind of look to see what's in between there. And lo and behold, what you have is the mission of Jesus. You have chapters 5 through 7, where Jesus' teaching is prominent. The Sermon on the Mount, you might have heard of that. You might have heard some sermons on the Mount, in a worship center near and dear to your hearts. Jesse's going through, of course, the Sermon on the Mount right now. But then when you get to chapter 8 and 9 in Matthew, you just have miracle after miracle after miracle, and healing and deliverances and all, just a showcase of his ministry. And I think showcase is a good word, because these are the things that he wanted to make clear and make known. This is what the ministry and mission of Jesus is all about. Now, on either side of that, it's also very significant. If you flip back to Matthew 4, right before this verse on that's describing Jesus' mission, back up in verse 18, they were walking by the Sea of Galilee. He saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting nets in the sea, for they were fishermen. He said to them, "Follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men." Immediately, they left their nets and followed him. Going on from there, he saw two others, James, son of Zebedee, and John, his brother. Immediately, they left their boat and their father and followed him. So the context for Jesus' mission is this: he's calling these disciples. He's not doing it himself. He's bringing his disciples into it. Now, if you go back to Matthew 9, sorry to make you flip around too much, but it's only a couple pages. Right after, Matthew again gives us the summary of what Jesus' ministry is. It says he saw the crowds because he had compassion on them. They were harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. He said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. Therefore, pray earnestly the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest." So again, after defining and bracketing the ministry of Jesus, preceding it with the selection of disciples, now he's saying to these same disciples, there's a big harvest, there's a lot of work to do, so pray to the Lord to send workers. And then actually they answered their own prayers, because in chapter 10, he called to him his 12 disciples, gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal every kind of disease, and he gives their name there. Verse 5, these 12 Jesus sent out, instructing them, "Go nowhere among the Gentiles, enter no town of Samaritans, rather go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and proclaim as you go, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons." Does that sound like familiar ministry? That was the ministry of Jesus. And now the disciples are to reproduce what they have seen their master teach and what they have seen him do. So back in chapter 4, you have the call to fish for men. Here at the end of Matthew 9 and into chapter 10, you have the call to preach in Galilee. And then finally, as Matthew ends his gospel in Matthew 28, you have the call to make disciples of all the nations. And this is really where Matthew was headed with this. That these disciples who were called to fish, called to preach in Galilee, are now called to make disciples of all the nations. So again, structurally, this is what Matthew was trying to get across. And what Jesus actually did was change the whole paradigm for what Jewish missions was all about. Because the Old Testament was all about the nations coming to see the glory of God in the nation of Israel, in the temple, in the temple worship system, in the laws of the country, in the way that he, Yahweh, was king and over this people. They were supposed to be a light to the nations. God told Abraham back in Genesis 12 that in you all the nations of the world will be blessed. They were supposed to come and see the glory of God in the nation of Israel. The best example is probably the Queen of Sheba, who came up from Ethiopia and saw the splendor of Solomon and his temple and all, and then you can, as you read about her, she's worshiping God. She's praising God for how blessed they are to have Solomon as their ruler, and this outpouring of riches and greatness that they had. She worshiped God from what she saw. Now, that was good, but the problem was there's so few examples of it, and Israel was just such a sinful, apostate kind of state that they weren't really shining the glory of Christ anywhere in the world. But the New Testament really turns that on its head. And what you see as the book of Acts opens, you'll be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth, you see this explosion outwards, going and telling. All of the disciples went out to various parts of the world with the gospel. And so through this series of calls, the call to fishermen, the call to preach in Galilee, the call to make disciples of all the nations, Jesus really did change the paradigm and left a pattern for the church to reproduce his ministry, to go to the lost sheep, to leave the 99 and go after the one, to make disciples of all the nations. And so as a church, when we move into that, when we engage in missions, we're actually doing what Jesus called his church to do from the very start. And so it is an integral part, just an essential part of what a church is really to be all about. You all listened well. Any questions, comments on Jesus' mission and the call to the church to reproduce it and to make disciples of all the nations? Questions, comments? Stephen.
Why would it be the same in the Old Testament, go and tell, but a little different?
Well, because, the question for those who are listening by audio is, why wouldn't it have been any different in the Old Testament? It's just a different process, because rather than selecting a people out of all the peoples of the world, God had chosen Israel to be a place where his glory would be manifested through the temple, through the laws. And that was a country that was supposed to manifest his glory. And others were supposed to see that. If you read, like in Solomon's Prayer, the dedication of the temple, it talks about when foreigners come and they see and they pray. And there's a lot of language in the Old Testament about these sojourners or foreigners who are coming. So it was just a different a different period of salvation history, where the focus was more on Israel and them being a demonstration of God's greatness, his mercy, his glory, his majesty, that the nations were supposed to see. But God had from the start, if you go back to Genesis 12, from the start, God didn't just have, God had much more in mind than just Israel, because all the nations of the world were to be blessed through his blessing of Israel. Good question. Anything else? I want to give you some idea of where in the world Emmanuel Missions is going. When I say where in the world will be going, it's not a criticism of the elders here or something, that we're going in a wrong direction. I literally mean, where in the world are we going? You have several areas of involvement that we have. We're involved in the support of missionaries that are international, that are U.S.-based, that are local here. Short-term missions, I'm sure you all are aware of that there's teams that go out and receive support from the congregation to go and do the work of God in different parts of the country, different parts of the world. We're part of a missions consortium with other like-minded churches here in Northern Virginia. I'll say a bit more about that. And we do have some local activities here that are focused up a lot on the nations and internationals. You know, God has chosen to bring the people of the nations right here to this part of the world, and we're really planted in a sea of ethnic diversity. And all around us are Spanish speakers and Ethiopians and Chinese and Koreans and everything else. So through our English classes for internationals, through Emmanuel's Hope, which probably has 90% of its clientele are immigrants, oftentimes newly arrived into the country, who are very, very needy. And our prayer ministries that spend a lot of time praying for the nations and for our missionaries. This is the way that we stay plugged in and involved. You have this sheet, the 8.5 by 11 sheet of IBC supported workers. I'm distributing this with a little bit of trepidation. Please be careful with this. Don't copy it. Don't take pictures of it and post it. Don't. Use it for your prayer. A lot of the people who are on here have really requested that it be difficult to online to find any links between them and the U.S. churches. A few years back, maybe 5-6 years ago, there were over 100 missionaries that were expelled from Morocco, the country of Morocco. Well, there was a Muslim group that was there that started doing research on people that were in that country, and they found, messages that were posted. They found, we're so thankful for your support as we go to, preach Jesus Christ to the Muslims, and statements of faith from the organizations where they were coming from, and published those things, and it became just a real scandal, and the country threw out over 100 workers because there was a carelessness with postings. And a lot of times, even our U.S., we used to put all the names even of our U.S. workers and things, and a lot of them were saying, I'm going to be, this summer, I'm going to be in, the Middle East, or I'm going to be in China, or I'm going to be somewhere. And so even the U.S.-based workers were kind of careful. So we try to be careful. So you be careful, please. But these are divided out by regions of the world. And you can see here, 8 in Africa, 6 in Asia, 4 in Europe, 5 in this immediate D.C. metro area. 4 in the Middle East, 16 in other parts of North America, and then 4 in South America. We do support some organizations. There's the second column on the backside, 9 different organizations that receive ongoing support. A lot of those are local organizations that are based right here that either have a lot of volunteers from Emmanuel involved with them or else. People from here even have started them. And some retired missionaries, way back when, they didn't think a whole lot about missionaries and their retirement. They just said, trust the Lord and go. And so they really need supplemental support because they really didn't build anything in the years while they were serving. They didn't build a whole lot in to develop some retirement funds. So the statistics box in the at the bottom, at the end there, just gives you a little bit of an idea of overall who's doing what. The majority of our people are involved in church planning, evangelism, making disciples, bringing them into the church. There's several that are in specialty ministries here. Student ministries, some with CREW, other organizations too that are working with either high school or college students. Of course, this is a strong military, a church that has had a lot of military people. So some people from this church have gotten involved in ministry to the military. A lot of our people have kind of moved into leadership positions within their missions and are having quite an impact that way. But overall, at the bottom there, you can see 55% of the ones we support are overseas. They're based overseas, 45% based in the U.S., but 70% are involved in even people that are U.S.-based are involved internationally. They're involved cross-culturally with people from other parts of the world. And almost half of the ones that we're involved with are focused on unreached people groups. This is a real problem in missions, is that only 3% of workers are going to areas where people are largely unreached. Most missionaries are deployed in places where Christians are already present, churches are already present, and they end up in more supportive kind of roles. And on the money side, it's even worse. Less than 1% of all the funds that go into missions are actually making it into developing works in unreached parts of the world. So only 3% of the workers, and like half of 1% of the money is going where it's really needed. So we're pleased that almost half of the missions money that we're spending is going into unreached parts of the world. There's a question here.
Yeah, Michael, the only one I know of is those all little mountaintops on Papua New Guinea. Where else are people unreached?
Well, I have some stuff on that I could send you, Ken. There's about 4,000, 4,700, I think, unreached groups, which there's definitions for all that, and there's Christian groups, mission groups that map these things. Joshua Project is one, the International Mission Board for the Southern Baptists. Those are places where you can really see some statistics. I will tell you that half of the group, fully half of the unreached groups in the world are in the country of India. And many, many in northern India. When you see like a map with dots on where these groups are, India is almost completely shaded. There's an area of the world called the 1040 window, which is from 10 degrees north to 40 degrees north, starting from West Africa going over towards Japan, the Philippines, and all that. And about 85% of the world's population is there, but about the same number of, about the same percentage of people who are unreached are in that area. So for 20 years or so, it's been a missions initiative to get more resources into that box, defined by 10 and 40 degrees north, and then all the way across Africa, Europe, Asia. Yeah?
There's a group called New Tribes Missions.
Yes.
That has been renamed to Ethnos 360.
Yes.
They're very much involved in reaching these unreached groups. They're, many of them are in South America as well. They're tribes that have been isolated.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, in India.
Yeah. The Great Commission was go and make disciples of all the nations, which are the ethnos. They didn't have nations like we do now, these political entities that sometimes, you know, can contain hundreds of these people groups. But the ethnos are really the ethnic groupings of people, either defined by a geography or a language. And Marilyn says, There's organizations that study that and then do a good job of deploying people where those groups are.
I have two questions. I didn't catch the new name for New Tribes.
Go ahead, Mary.
Ethnos
360.
They're located in Stanford, Florida. If you want their address, I can get it.
My other question is, how about Bible translation? That has a lot to do with unreach.
This group also does translation.
Yeah, there are a number of groups that do it. Wycliffe Bible Translators are probably the biggest and the most sophisticated. We, through our Northern Virginia Consortium, we support Mike and Rhonda Cochran. And Mike, for many years, has been really on the forefront of a lot of the computer application to the work of Bible translation, and they have dramatically reduced the amount of time that it takes to translate a language. It's dramatically different because of the use of computer technology.
There's a Illuminations. That's all of the Bible translators, or a bunch of them together.
Illumination. I'm not familiar with that. Question behind you.
Yeah, what's the process that we use here at IBC to get on this list?
Yeah, the question is how do you get on the list of supported workers? Four ways generally. One is that we send people out from here. There's people that have grown up here that we've talked to about missions since they were children, and they grow up and they want to go do something, and we don't say at that point, go warm and be fed, and you know, we don't want anything to do with you. We will support people who come up from this church that are going out on work. Second way would be through our Northern Virginia Consortium. This is four churches in Northern Virginia, and we try between the four of us to come up with one new worker a year out of one of those four churches, and then the other three will come alongside so that we can get a new worker into an unreached part of the world every year. On this list, the ones that have two crosses after their names are consortium missionaries. Some of them have come from IBC, but others have come from our consortium partners, which are Cherrydale Baptist, Chantilly Bible, and Reston Bible are the other churches that are involved in the consortium. So like this Wycliffe Bible translator who's done so much with the computer work, he was from Chantilly Bible, and we began supporting them through our partnership with the consortium. A third way to get support from us is to be involved in one of the areas where we're strategically involved. We call them areas of strategic partnership or strategic engagement. We have areas of the world where we've chosen to be involved. And it's not just a passive responding to where people coming up from the congregation where they want to go. It's like, okay, this is where we want to be active. And we have taken on workers in those areas. A fourth way would be local organizations. We call them our near neighbors. We kind of do life and ministry together. A lot of times they have people who attend here. Assist Pregnancy might be a good example of that. It was started by people from Emmanuel. There's a lot of Emmanuels that are on staff or volunteers there. We try to bring their clients over here to have a church where they can be involved. So we do have these near neighbor organizations as well. So in that, there's a whole lot of people. There's a whole lot of others. There's a whole lot of people that don't fit those categories. But even what we have here is challenging financially. This is very challenging just to be able to do those things. So I do have to sweetly say no to an awful lot of people and works. I'm convinced that every single person here in this church knows somebody that would be a wonderful and worthy recipient of the church's support, either a nephew or a grandson or a college roommate or somebody that they know or a place where they've been. And we encourage it. We want you to do things to develop that, but that doesn't mean that centrally from the church we're going to be able to get involved in all those things.
Can you tell us what the budget is?
So, yeah, it was just approved. I'm trying to think what that new number was. I think it's about $700,000, it depends a little bit on how you're cutting it. You know, are you cutting like the whole department with salaries, or is it like for the ministry budget? If you're just talking about the working of the ministry, I think it's about $700,000, and that's really about half. Almost half of the ministry budget of the church goes towards missions. But if you include in building maintenance and salaries and things like that, it ends up to be about $1 million out of seven. So about a seventh.
Oh,
who?
I did have a question.
Yeah.
But it has been answered pretty well.
Okay.
Because I was saying the way our country is going today, that it's wonderful to support all of these different countries, and I'm all for that. And but it seems to be that we need a little bit more in our country.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
And but somebody else.
Some of our consortium partners are you know, like strongly not offering support to U.S.-based workers or people that are working in reached countries, but that's not our approach. If you see from the statistics on the back, 45% of the people that we support are U.S.-based. like a good example, Dottie's here, her grandchildren, Caleb and Kate, Britton, long time here in the church, and they're in Florida working with students through FCA. So we are willing to take those works on to strengthen the work in this country and not neglect it. Aaron?
Well, I don't know if you're going to touch on this, but does IBC or the Northern Virginia Mission Consortium, does it work in concert, or is it in more like competition to the innumerable other like international mission organizations, or even say from the Baptist side, the North Star Network
right.
here in Northern Virginia?
Right. So it's cooperative. Almost everybody that we supported, the question was, is it a competing thing or cooperative thing with the missions agencies? And all of our workers, save for the Northern Virginia Consortium, and really almost every worker sent out from Emmanuel, is working through an organization like Caleb and Kate with FCA, or a number of our workers going internationally have gone with various agencies. Only one or two out of the whole time that I've been here, almost 20 years, has there been someone who wasn't under the auspices of an agency. So we do work with them.
I guess my question was more like from a strategic overarching plan of, is there like a every 4 years, like all of the various mission organizations come together in like a conference to like plan out like, here's our overarching, let's take this as like a military operation of how do we best utilize a limited set of resources to maximize the overall impact?
So the question was whether there are larger organizations, like things that would group maybe large churches, large mission agencies.
I'm not talking about it being like a federation, but more like a confederation of, you know, each organization pretty much runs itself, but at least some like moment in time or periodic like realignments, so that you're not sent like four different organizations are independently sending all the resources to just one country.
Or those things actually do happen. Those type of larger groupings. There's a group called Finish the Task that's trying to identify all of the unreached and unengaged people groups and get groups to commit to those. So that's a way of dispersing and keeping like six groups from saying, all right, we're going to work with this one, and then neglecting the other five that are around there. So I think there are some efforts. There are some larger consultations or groupings or conferences or things where some of these overall strategic things are being coordinated. I think it is happening. In the back.
With the consortium, do you guys cover 100% of the missionary support?
Or no.
Do they try to get from other places
too? Yeah, we have guidelines. It depends a little bit. Is it a family that's really expensive? Is it a single that's not so much? That affects it. But our general guideline is, the question was about funding from the consortium, is it 100%? Typically we ask the sponsoring church, the church that they're coming from, if they could pick up 30% and then the other churches pick up 10, that would be a base of 60 for a new worker. And we think then with individuals and other contacts and things that they have, that they're able. The goal is really to get them to have most of their or all of their support right in this area, so they don't have to travel all around to 30 different churches while they're on home assignment, and it can just be so tiring to have to do that. But we would love to get them so that all or most of their support is from this area. Then we get to spend more time with them, and it's easier on their family.
Is Dave still here?
No.
Dave and I are on the financial committee.
Right.
Yeah, we spent, Emmanuel's budget is about 8.5 mil. 1.3 goes to worldwide missions.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, our budget topped 8 million, I think, this year. It was in the sevens.
And
so now over eight, and 1.3 for missions. That includes all the salary and some building things that are in there, too. All right, there's something over here. Was there? Yeah.
Does the church do like a missions conference, or how do you let your general membership be aware of all of this information?
Yeah, thank you. We do things, you know, missions is a part of the life of the church, I would say. We used to do a missions conference, and it I think it kind of died a natural death. That was even before I came on board here, is that it a lot of churches have moved away from that and just kind of incorporated mission activity. Like last week, we showed a video from a short-term trip to Italy. You know, we've done evening services. We commission missionaries to go off on Sunday morning. So it's more integrated, I think, into the life of the church than a set apart time.
Is that just because of the changes that have been, like a change in the world, the dynamic of like people trying to find out if the missionaries are? So a question of why the change on that.
You know, it was hard to get people out to do things midweek, and you already had kind of structure and things that people were doing. The midweek things were not all that effective, and there are a lot of missionaries who prefer not to be identified or associated. We could probably do something. Some of the other consortium churches do conferences, but we had already ended those before I started here, and there didn't seem to be a whole lot of interest in reviving that. Let me move on.
Michael.
Yeah.
Is AI going to help with the translations?
Oh, of course. Question is artificial intelligence going to help with Bible translation? I'm sure it will. Yeah. They're very, very cutting edge already. Mike Cochran was here just in this room last year, gave a presentation on kind of how the computer technology has affected translation over the years. And that was just a little bit before this AI wave, but I'm sure that it will. Yeah, Marilyn.
So you mentioned finishing the task.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit more about how this church is involved in that?
I attended one of those conferences. The question was on the finishing the task group and conference. We coordinate with that. We're engaged with a group in India that they know about, but it's a decentralized. It's kind of a decentralized group anyway. You know, they provide resources, but they like to see who's working among various unreached groups, and we do make sure they know where we're involved. It wasn't started by him. He moved into leadership of that. But he was not the starter. All right. Just some of the trends I'll tell you quickly about things that are going on here. We're doing more with national workers. If we have places in the world where we're strategically involved, we've been picking up support of national workers there. Some churches have, I think Reston Bible Church has maybe 200 or more workers that they support, and a lot of them are national workers in various parts of the world. We do like national workers, but we like to know them well and make sure about them and the situations that they're in. So we tend to pick up national workers in areas where we've been involved. We've been involved in Ghana for years and now have four workers in Ghana. Rwanda, you all have heard about Rwanda for a lot of years, and we support their director. Cuba, we've picked up, we've been involved there and picked up workers from there. Japan, where the Haugs have been faithfully church planting for years and years. So these are all areas, Ecuador, there's a couple in Ecuador that it's supported, and Hispanos en Cristo has been going to Ecuador for about 10 years on short-term missions. So these are all places where we really do know these national workers, and always delight when they're able to come. A lot of them aren't, but like when the Charles Mugisha from Rwanda or Freda Modarko from Ghana, when they're here, we try to give them visibility. A number of our IBC missionaries have moved into leadership of their organizations and are doing some real good to make the global work of these ministries a reality. Dottie's son, Dave is here. Dan is in Kansas City, but has done so much for FCA that was really mostly a U.S. Based outreach on the sports front, but to connect the U.S. work to all the regions of the world. Dan did a marvelous job of that. Kirk and Lynn Murray. Kirk was a colonel that retired, went on staff with Family Life Ministry, and is their international ministry vice president. And so really responsible for all the development of Family Life Ministry all over the world. Alvin Hull, supported by this church, and he finished doctoral work in retention of missionaries, keeping missionaries on the field, how to help them to stay longer, because it's a huge problem. These people stay 3 years, 4 years before they're really competent in the language or really seeing fruit from their work, they're leaving. And you usually don't get effective till after 5 years, and a lot of them are leaving at three or four. So it's a terrible problem, and so his research and some of his conclusions, findings, recommendations are being listened to by now not just his agency, but several other mission agencies. So it's just the way some of the people that we're involved with have moved into leadership within the mission world. We have shifted some our deployment. A number of them came back from Europe. Asia really was affected by COVID. China, everybody was in China. Almost all the Americans who were in China had to leave. A lot of them have not been able to go back. But when that area goes down, other areas go up. We are seeing more that are deployed in Africa, South America, and the Middle East. Two new ones to the Middle East in the last couple of years. I'd mentioned Caleb and Kate Britton who had gone out. Four single women. The girls are beating the boys. There's just some amazing women from this church and from the consortium that are stepping up and already serving or preparing to serve, learning language to go to very difficult places in the world. Refugee camps in the Middle East, rural locations in Central Africa. So it's impressive, and we'd love to see some men step up too, but we're grateful for those that that God has called. Short-term missions, another important aspect of what Emmanuel does. These are some of the teams that have been out this year. Really, we just got started here. The Rome trip, I was on that, got back. A couple of weeks ago, we did a vacation Bible school with Jordan and Jenny Standrich in Rome, where they are church planning. Hispanos en Cristo were in the jungle in Ecuador, a very difficult trip. We're kind of in the season now where the youth trips are going out. The young adults are taking a small team to Nicaragua. They go out this week. We've been involved in Nicaragua for a lot of years. Drilling wells, doing evangelism, doing hygiene training, really helping the quality of life. But a lot of times they would drill a well right on church property or right near the church so that it became a natural point for the church to connect with their communities. Dominican Republic is a new area for us. We have been sending a lot of teams to Cuba, but difficult there from COVID and their recovery and some of the social unrest and things that are going on there. So Dominican Republic has been a place where we're trying to do more, and we have two teams that will be going there shortly. Music and worship is gearing up for an orchestra trip to Cuba next year. Women's ministry also is sending a teaching team, and we will do a larger team to Rwanda. And I would think like more of a family trip to Dominican Republic next summer as well. We do trips into D.C. We have that planned for October of next year. And this is a involvement over 4 days in 8 to 10 different ministries there, kind of a sampler plate. And then people can go back and get involved in things that they enjoyed. Any questions about our short-term work? We don't fund them much from our budget. The short-term, like all these, I think participants in all these is over 200 people from the church. Youth probably over 100 alone of the high schoolers. It makes such an impact on the lives of these high schoolers. We see it later on with people who are coming to us for support as vocational workers or as missionaries. They say, oh, you know, I went on a trip when I was in high school and really saw the need in different parts of the world. I've been praying about it since then. So it is very influential. Questions about our short-term work. We do try to go back to multiple places, not just one-off. We try to build a long-term relationship so that the things that we're doing are helpful. Or else we go to places like we did in Rome, where we go to a place where we already have a missionary, and then we're fitting in with something that they're already doing.
Yes, that was the question I was going to ask. How does one pursue it? How do you pick, you know, you've obviously got room in 2024 for some of these. So how are you going to select them?
And I don't know where the youth are going in 24, so that's one reason they're not in here. There'll be quite a bit more. This is just kind of what I knew now. In terms of picking, a lot of it is it's places where we've been and want to maintain a relationship. How do you pick where to go? You know, if you go somewhere new, a lot of times we'll take a survey trip there. I'll go, or a couple of people will go, and just kind of, you know, where are people going to stay? How's the food? You know, what are the opportunities for ministry? I like places where there's a lot of opportunity for different ministries within our church, because in our church you've got, you know, the youth that want to do things, the young adults want to do things. Lately, it's ABFs that want to get a group together to go somewhere. The team that went to Italy was mostly out of one ABF here. Music and worship, doing an orchestra trip, men's trips, women's trips. So you've got these natural populations in the church, if you will. And it's nice. One reason we like Dominican Republic is that there's construction, there's medical work to be done, there's families that can go, there's VBSs, there's women's programs. So there's lots of ways for groups from our church to go as a group and do something meaningful together.
Just a follow-up.
Yeah.
So do you already have partner churches or partner organizations that your relationship is set with, or do you take suggestions from your members? Oh, you should check out this organization and things like that.
Mostly, the question was, do we have organizations, churches that we mostly work through, or do we take suggestions about places to go? It's mostly the former. These are almost all these places are places where we've been for a long time. We've done 6 years there. We've done 10 years there. We've been involved with Ghana for 20 or 30 years. But, and again, I'm always encouraging people to go and do things, and even if the church can't, in a centralized way, sponsor it. But, for instance, there's a family here in the church that have been doing mission trips to France for at least 15 years, I think. And she came to me even just a few months ago saying, hey, can we get a group from the church and go to France? I said, well, it's late in the year to consider that. Why don't you just see if there's people that you know that want to go? Well, last Sunday, Jesse and I and Steve Holly prayed for this group. There were 12 from Emmanuel that are going with her and her husband, and they're in France on a short-term mission right now. So next year, I really have to look at it. I say, well, maybe France should be on the list. So that's an example of one that's kind of grown up from the congregation. But it's more rare than than the support either of our current missionaries like we did in Rome, or else places where we've gone back several times and they know us, we know them, we're able to plug in quickly and effectively. Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and how Emmanuel supports that?
Yeah. So, question about Advocates International, which is one of the organizations Emmanuel supports. So, Advocates International was started by a man named Sam Erickson, who was a very prominent layman here at Emmanuel. He was chairman of our elder board and just a real force of nature. He had been, I think, with Christian Legal Society, but then saw, you know, there's such a need internationally and in so many countries for Christian attorneys to group together, to encourage one another, and maybe they're working on religious liberties things, or maybe like in Eastern Europe, they were very influential in helping get religious freedom language into the constitutions from the countries that emerged from the Soviet bloc in the early 90s. So it was started by someone at Emmanuel. There's still a lot of volunteers from here that go there, that stuff the letters, that volunteer. They had office workers that were part of our, that were from here at our church. So it's just a good example of someone from Emmanuel who starts an organization and then we continue to support it.
Do you support financially?
Financially, yeah. And with, I mean, we've done many, many things, Marilyn, over the years. I mean, we've had, they've used our space for conferences. They've had meetings here. Again, volunteers and staff people that were from Emmanuel. So we've helped them in multiple ways. All right. Anything else on short term? We do have a new initiative that is encouraging, a church planning initiative. We are trying over the next 10 years to do additional work of supporting church planting efforts in a lot of areas of the world. And so we've been putting the word out to places where we've been involved. And this was true in, I've just come from Rome. It's true is in Cuba, in Rwanda. We're considering that. In India, I'm working with our partners there to do more of a church planning effort. This is just so rewarding, and it's something that resonates so well with our church, is getting a strong evangelical churches planted in difficult parts of the world. Maybe none more difficult than in Jind, which is in northeast India, almost a completely unreached area. We have a ferociously courageous church planter that's there. This is a region of 3 million people, pretty close to the D.C. area. Can you imagine the D.C. area without one church? This was the first church building. We helped. We took some Thanksgiving offerings and some money for missions, and we probably put about half of the money into that church building with a lodging up on top for the pastor and his family. He was in rented places, and when his Hindu landlords would find out that he was a pastor, they would, you know, like after 6 months or so, they would kick him out. And so they were really vagabonds. But now they have a place to live above the church. Elder George Lawrence and I went over there a couple years ago to be a part of the opening. And it was a really, really joyful. You can see how colorful it is. Everybody's sitting on the mats. And that's me speaking from the podium there for the inauguration of this church building. Yeah.
Is that legal in India?
Legal, yes.
And it's different in different.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is it legal to have a church in India? Yes, it's legal. There's a lot of different religious traditions there. The Prime Minister of India was here recently. He's just saying how wonderful and peaceful everything was, but it's really not. There's a resurgence of Hindu nationalism, and this pastor, Manful, if you want to pray for him, I mean, he gets these gangs, these RSS, I think it's called. It's kind of a militant, strongly Hindu nationalistic movement. And so he gets groups of these young people that'll come and say, why are you here? You know, what are you doing? And how are you converting people? And he's been confronted several times. And there's not a lot of wood in this building, and that was intentional because he didn't want it to get burned down.
Is this
Manful? That's Manful, yes. So here's the little storefront church. Our church bought about a third of this building too, with the Standridges in Italy. It's fun to see it because we were just there last week. It's just in a storefront. It used to be a nail salon. There's a lady who poked her head in the door one day and said, what's going to be in here? It used to be a nail salon. What's going to be in here? And Jordan said, well, it's going to be a church. She goes, why couldn't it be something useful? At least it was a nail salon before. You know, that was just a church. we had a VBS program, 25 kids, and it was just so fun and singing and laughing and all. People would walk by and look in, and Jordan was putting someone by the door who could just go out and interact with these people who were walking along the sidewalk buying their vegetables and probably had 60, 80 conversations just in front of the church because we were in there working. We've really helped get a number of communities started in Rwanda. This is one in southern Rwanda where we had a men's team last October. We gave the money to buy the land for this church. It's a large church, holds about 1,000 people. And when we were there, they did their second baptism. They had done a baptism with 108 people, and the one we were there was 63 within a year. So and now they've got another one. We visited this site where land had been cleared. You can see them holding up a picture of what the church is going to look like. This is a very strategic church. Right over the hill behind Pastor Fred's head is the National University. And they have 100 children young people in the university that are part of that have grown up through their sponsorship program. So they have a base of 100 high school students to be a part of this church plant. Cuba, we're still doing a lot. You can purchase buildings there. The building that is here, the cost of it is probably about $6,000 with the land, the building and the land for $6,000. Ken wants to retire there.
I don't want to be in construction.
But we can buy these. You can't get a permit for a church in Cuba, but you can buy these houses. And if it has a couple rooms, like where a pastor can live some of the time, you can convert, the main room can be a place for a church for maybe 40, 50 people. This is a congregation that was formed from a day of evangelism. We had an Emmanuel team there, and over 50 people indicated they came to Christ one day. And different from some other places, they started gathering and meeting in this little house, but now they really need a place to meet. And we've done this three other times, and it's very effective for a men's team to go and convert one of these houses. Maybe they break down some interior walls or put some fans up and a place to put a screen, and they make it ready for a church to meet inside one of these homes. So it's just a lot of fun to be involved in the work of church planting. I am going to end by talking about some ways to be involved. It's a big work. Missions is a big calling, an important calling. It's a big part, as Ken was telling us about the budget and the percentages of the money that's there. But there are some real needs that are there. Participants for these short-term trips, it can be hard. We had two younger families that went with us to Italy, but they both had young children. They had to fly. One of them had to fly to Illinois. One of them drove up to New Jersey and then flew out of New York so that they could get their kids with grandparents while they were over there for a week. People have to take time off of work. So it can be some cost to be involved in short-term trips. We just never want to get to a place where all we're doing is writing checks, you know? We really want people to be able to go and be involved and to feel and to taste and to smell and to meet people and to hug and to see God use them and do evangelism and to pray for that place when they return. There are, as we've mentioned, assist pregnancy or Youth for Christ, Young Life, Advocates International, some of these organizations that are here, Central Union Mission, Young Life. these are all organizations that are local that could really use volunteer involvement. I know that's true over at Assist and these other places as well. So being involved in local organizations is a way to be involved in missions. Hospitality for visiting missionaries. We often get emails from missionaries. Hey, we're going to be in Northern Virginia in the fall. Do you know any place that could, put us up for a couple of weeks, or housing for missionaries, or even just a few days? I mean, if they're just like 3 or 4 days in the area, a lot of times it's challenging for missionaries of where they're going to stay. We do not have housing. We do not own any housing. Some churches do have housing where people can come in short term. I wish we did. We don't. We've helped with vehicles. We do have a missions vehicle that families can use. But we really do rely a lot of times on volunteers or just people that want to host, whether for a meal or whether for a stay for short term or longer term. Some people maybe have a little basement apartment or something where someone could stay for several weeks or a month. It's good for us to know about those things if you have interest in hosting for a meal or for a short term, or if you have even some longer term housing opportunities. It's good for us to know that.
Who do we contact? Your office one?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Or you took this sheet. There is a email address that's on there that gets to me, and the missions assistant is Betty Hartman. And one of the two of us will see those things. Prayer, you can use these sheets for prayer. Our Wednesday evening meetings, our Sunday morning meetings, most prayer meetings of the church have real times of prayer for our missionaries. Just the financial support of it. As I said, our short-term teams, people that go raise funds for that. Thank you if you've been involved in supporting some of the kids or the adults that are going. But it really is wonderful to see God's generosity. This team going this week to Nicaragua, they had enough for their individual support, but they're going to be repairing wells, some of these wells even that former teams of Emmanuel have drilled. And they need maintenance. Well, it's about $500 maintenance costs for each one, and they'd like them to do 12 in the week. That was $6,000. They didn't have that $6,000. So he called me, and I said, well, we could provide some from our budget, but we just need to pray. Next day, he called me back. He said, you will not believe this. I saw somebody from our Sunday school class, and he said they had some money they were looking to put towards missions, and he told him, well, we need $6,000 for wells. He says, that's the exact amount that my wife and I wanted to give. So, 24 hours. So the financial support is important. Some of these projects and things too, we've had realtors that have said, hey, this is cool to get a house and turn it into a church down in Cuba. We've had a realtor that sponsored a couple of those houses, and that was a good thing. So being involved, and then there's so many missionaries, like we said, even with the ones coming from the consortium, maybe that's probably at a max, that's probably 60% of their support. Well, they'll be seeing individuals in the churches and things. Christine, who's going out recently from this church, Davis, the Stanridges, they saw a lot of families in the church who are individual supporters of them outside of what they get from the church. Marilyn.
So if we submit like a check and it has missions on it, how do you determine where that money goes?
So the question is, if you have if you just want to support missions, how do you do that? That would, because missions is a huge part of our overall budget. If they get a check in that just says, missions, they're going to put it in the general, as a general offering, because of the large amount of support that missions is getting through the budget. if it's a specific project or a specific individual going on a mission project and things, there are webs, there's giving pages for that so that that gets designated for that specific project or that specific person.
So
but if it's general, it's going to go to the...
Yeah, so if it's not specified, it goes into the mission budget.
No, it goes into our general fund, which funds the mission budget.
But if it goes into the general fund,
mm-hmm.
it can be used for something else.
Yes, it could.
Instead of
missions. Yes.
Even though it's
yes.
So you have to be more specific.
Yeah, you have to either find a project that is where funds are being raised for it through the budget.
Church plants on that, then it would definitely be. Or international church.
You could talk to me about that. I mean, I understand it. I understand that missions is a key driver of generosity or things that people want to do, but it's also, you know, a huge chunk. I mean, it's about a seventh of our whole budget, and we don't want to be a church where it's like, okay, I'm giving for loudspeakers for the youth room, or materials for the English classes, or we have a general fund that funds a lot of those things. We're able to do an awful lot of mission work through the budget that we have. I think we had maybe $80,000 at the end of our fiscal year, and we were able to help missionaries with about $80,000 worth of projects. So it's generous through the budget, so we're happy with that.
Right. What you're saying is you don't need to write missions on it
because
it will
just go
to the general fund.
There are... Generally, that's true, yes. But there are some specific projects and certainly the individuals going on mission trips and things where it would be designated and accounted for that specific thing.
So how can we find out what those specific projects are that, where
there's a need? There is a missions giving page that has all of the short-term trips and some of the projects and things that we're raising
and
for.
And so if you mentioned those on your check,
yes.
We'll go to that. So
check or... Yeah, through like the short term, the stomp page, the giving in there shows giving for individuals and some a couple of projects.
So that's how you can.
Mm-hmm. That's how you could specify it. Mm-hmm.
Are there ways that we can get signed up for different mission letters from different missionaries?
Yes, you could. This email address that you have here, missions@ibc.church. You could let because when those come in, my assistant has a distribution group that's getting letters, and she could either send them or just get their contact info so that they could send them to you directly.
I have a question regarding safety, right? And pardon the ignorance, but a lot of folks in our church have whole security clearances.
Yes.
And the like. How do you go about assessing like physical security? All I ever heard growing up in the 90s about Rwanda was it was like horrible civil war driven.
It was in the 90s.
Right? So how do you educate people or include people on these trips maybe with security clearances or that may have some other physical safety concerns?
Well, I do work with them, and Cuba's been very problematic for that. There's a number of people that because of where they're employed have not been able to go, but I do have some people both in DOD and Homeland Security that keep me abreast of things going on in different countries, and we're able to factor that into whether we're going to take a trip to a certain area. We didn't take trips to Cuba for 3 years, and a lot of that was because of some of these troubles that are here. France has been having riots, and so we look pretty carefully at that, and talk to State Department, talk to pastors locally there about the situation. We try not to send people into dangerous areas, but.
Well, I guess the question would be like, take Rwanda for an example. Like, when you guys hit the ground, do people from the church come and say, help transport you to the site?
Oh, sure.
So that you're not reliant on some I don't know, some Joe Smith off the street.
No, it's all very carefully orchestrated. There was one year, this is a funny story, there was one year where it was an election year in Rwanda, and there were a couple of bombs that had been set earlier on, and one of them actually went off near a place where they had their whole staff meeting, and kind of shook them up literally and figuratively. So they canceled all the trips for that summer, except for one, and that was the Emmanuel Men, because they were going to go to a remote village right on the border, and they say nothing ever happens there, and besides, the Emmanuel Men are all former military; they're used to getting shot at. So they did let the Emmanuel Men come, but all the other ones got canceled. This last one here, we do like it when there's people who have a heart for missions in whatever they're doing, like in their ABF or a small group or with their youth or women's ministry or different things. There are some ways that people can serve. Like there's been a couple in the children's ministry this past year, the Andersons, that have said, we just really want to help get mission information to children. And so they've been getting videos from our different missionaries and having different foci every month to present missions to kids. So we love that. If there's an area where you want to be more active, you can get in touch with me as well. I'll put, you have the missions at ibc.church. Here's my personal email is on there as well. And any way to be involved, even giving a cup of water, Jesus said, in my name, makes a difference. So your giving, your prayers, your going, the sending, the encouragement of our young people, children, grandchildren, Dottie, and others is something that's helping expand God's kingdom and fulfill the Great Commission. So I'm grateful for anything that anybody does. Are we done? Let's pray. Lord, thank you that you do send us so many places in the world. We do pray today for our missionaries, Lord, that you'd encourage them. I think of Italy, where we just were. We pray as they have their service there this evening, Lord, that some of those families touched by the children's program we did, that they'd be there, or children that heard the truth of the gospel, Lord, would be hungry to hear more. Pray for those in Ecuador. Pray for the Nicaragua team that goes out this week. Lord, thank you so much for providing for them. The teams that are going out soon to Dominican Republic and Lord, just so many other things that are happening here. We are grateful and want to be involved. We do pray so much, Lord, that your kingdom would be established all over the world. Thank you for the way you're using this church to be a part of that. In Jesus' name, amen. I'll mention one thing, and that is that I mentioned Alvin Hull in this presentation, the one that had done PhD work in retention and longevity. He's actually giving one of the seminars next week, just a wonderful speaker and a very senior leader now in his organization. If that's of interest to you, he will be doing a presentation next Sunday. Thank you all for being here, listening attentively. Lots of questions. I appreciate every one of them.
Hey Mike, how's the Hope Ministry? Are they having a lot of outreach in this area?